instead of a glare, which Aaron decided was an improvement. Still no comment, but note that I'm not going to attempt reassurance either. You can form your own conclusions. It took a few hours for all the groups to get back to the field office. Professor Collins finished his third head count and said,
"Okay, everyone's here that isn't in the infirmary. I'll fill them in later. Folks, I'm not a lawyer, thank God. But even I know that a release form isn't worth diddly if I knowingly take you all out into a more dangerous situation than you signed up for. I've been discussing things with the USGS folks here," he indicated one of the onlookers with a tilt of his head, "and this is not business as usual. Uplift in the caldera just increased by a foot. Even compared to the recent movement, that's dramatic. In fact, Dr. Lowenstern here has informed me that based on today, he's going to ratchet up the current volcano alert level from normal straight up to warning. And I remind you that the next level up from warning is oh shit." That got a brief, thin smile from the USGS rep, who had been looking very solemn through most of the professor's speech.
"Anyway," Collins said, "I've checked with the charter company, and they can take us home early. You'll get full credit regardless, but I'm going to change the term paper requirements a little to allow you to put in some personal observations of your experiences today."
Aaron found Sheila and Ayanda in the crowd of students.
"Hey, Sheila, did you get your butt cast?"
"Ha ha, you are too funny,"
Sheila replied, then continued in a more serious tone.
"I feel a little sorry for the people who got injured. Hell of a way to start the summer."
"No kidding,"
Ayanda chimed in.
"Two broken wrists, a broken arm, and two sprained ankles. Not a good day."
Aaron could hardly stop herself from bouncing up and down on her toes.
"But did you hear what the ranger said? Actual fissures. Someone said there might even have been a volcanic gas discharge." "Okay, geology girl. Time to change back into mild-mannered Aaron Savard. Sadly, we are out of here." "And they seem to be taking things more seriously now," Aaron replied. "Of course they can't buffalo the professor, and I doubt they'd want a public argument with him."
Sheila looked askance at Aaron.
"Girl, you are really starting to worry me. You think this is getting dangerous?" "Let's do a quick test,"
Aaron waved to Professor Collins as he walked by.
"Professor, any chance we can get a look at the damage from the quake?"
Professor Collins looked at her with a surprised expression.
"Not on foot, no. I'll tell you what, though. I'll talk to the pilot before we take off and see if he can come anywhere near the area. An aerial view might even be more interesting, certainly safer."
Aaron clapped her hands with enthusiasm.
"That'd be great."
Then, in an aside to Sheila,
"He doesn't seem too concerned. Maybe this isn't as bad as it looks."
Sheila shook her head.
"Famous last words."
9. That was not expected. Bill looked around the lab.
"You know, it was a better secret lair when it was a rat's nest of equipment and cables."
Richard glared at Bill, but didn't rise to the bait.
"Crap," Bill thought. "Losing my touch."
Richard waved a hand at the equipment.
"We've made a lot of improvements to the hardware that actually controls the portal effect. As Mighty Mouth here points out, we've cleaned it up and removed some redundancies. My computer setup and Matt's controller cards now fit into two server boxes with a couple of cables to Bill's gate hardware. The control software running on an iPad has allowed me to eliminate my breadboard control panels. We've also improved the tuning stabilization. Once we get a strong match, the device should home in on it and lock on, which should prevent the abrupt shift in focus that caused the bang last time."
Bill flapped his untucked shirt, trying to get some air movement. The day was hot, even for summer in Nebraska, and all the windows were open as far as they would go. It helped a little that this side of the building had been in shade for a while, but everyone was still wilting. Kevin was fanning himself with a Sky and Telescope magazine. Richard wiped his forehead.
"Yeah, I know, not the ideal day to be inside, so let's get this done so we can get out of here."
They went through the same sequence as last time. Kevin placed the dice-flipping device through the gate into the cage. He placed the video cameras in the usual spots. Preparations completed, Kevin activated the flipper, called out, 10 seconds, and walked back to join the others at the monitor. Richard worked the tablet, tuning the portal.
Here we go, he said and hit OK.
There was a loud roar and a jet of yellowish gas spewed out of the gate, blistering a spot in the far wall. The room heated up to an intolerable level, as if someone had opened a door to a blast furnace. The table with the control hardware spun 180 degrees, while the table with the test apparatus rocked back on two legs and almost went over. A bright spark shot from an electrical short. The equipment shut down and the gate closed, cutting off the stream. As the gas spread through the room, everyone stampeded out the door, coughing and gagging. Bill slammed the lab door behind him. He turned and looked at the others. Shock was written clearly on every face. For perhaps half a minute, no one spoke. Bill leaned on the lab door, waiting for someone else to say something or make the first move. Finally, when it was obvious no one else was going to volunteer, he cautiously opened the door to the lab. The odor and the heat were dissipating out the windows, and the room was becoming tolerable. After a brief hesitation, Bill walked in. Matt followed him in and went over to examine the blistered spot on the wall.
Still warm.
Well, that was fun. We must do that again sometime. Bill smirked, but he was clearly shaken. He glared at Matt. What was it you were wishing for? More drama? Are you happy now? Matt shrugged and managed to look both smug and embarrassed at the same time. Bill scrubbed his face with both hands, then quickly scanned the room. I guess we can all agree that wasn't expected behavior. Anyone? Richard responded with a snort. He spent a minute examining the equipment and soon found the smoldering cables.
So what exactly was that? Matt said. Any theories?
No, but that's why we have cameras, Kevin said,
returning with the three cameras in hand. One of them looked much worse for wear. Kevin connected the dented and abused camera to the monitor and pressed play. The video showed the flipper losing focus for less than a second, then a chaotic series of frames ending with a blurry image of the floor and some table legs.
I think we'll have to retire that particular camera, Richard observed. The optics look pretty much done for.
Bill chuckled.
Don't you mean toasted?
I think it was more of a pressure cooking, Matt said.
Richard glared at them.
Is everything a comedy routine with you two?
Kevin, ignoring the byplay, connected one of the other cameras. This time the image showed a faint plume of yellowish gas fountaining from the gate. The effect lasted less than 2 seconds before it was cut off. They restarted the video and played it one frame at a time. When they had the plume in full view, Bill commented,
Damned if it doesn't actually look like the jet that comes out when the Stargate starts up.
He grinned at Matt, who rolled his eyes in reply. They looked at the video from the third camera, but other than being from a different angle, it didn't provide any additional information. The only difference worth noting was 6 frames of Richard in mid-jump, looking very alarmed. Bill took the remote from Kevin and played the frames through several times.
Okay, funny boy, enough, Richard said after the third replay. He grabbed the remote from Bill and pointedly placed it on the table.
Richard paused, considering.
I think we're going to have to try that again, but maybe with a little more preparation. Bill, can you come up with anything that could maintain a sealed atmosphere around the gate?
There are a couple of things in the engineering department that could be adapted, I think,
Bill replied.
Depends on how much pressure we need to hold.
Probably not a huge amount. The jet didn't come out like a power washer spray. Couldn't have been more than a couple of atmospheres.
Okay. Let me think about it.
Bill sat down and stared into space.
I think we have something that might work if I can borrow it and get it back with nobody noticing.
Matt examined the equipment in the room looking for any other damage. Kevin sat down and went into math mode.
After about 10 minutes, they all came together in the lab to compare notes.
"I had a quick look at the logs," Richard said. "The lock-in worked. It just didn't lock into what we were trying for. The phase space became chaotic, and the equipment found some kind of strange attractor that was way, way beyond the limits we'd set."
"How does the equipment ignore the set limits?" Matt said.
"This particular attractor seems to be such a strong locus that it was like rolling downhill." Richard paused and scratched his head, apparently searching for words.
"The equipment didn't require extra power to latch onto it. In fact, it would have required extra power to avoid doing so." "What I think that means," Kevin added, "is that there is an alternate reality that is more real than our rolled die. Our small retunings of reality are non-stable points in the phase space, so as soon as the equipment gets close to something stable, it's like, well, like Richard says, it's like rolling downhill."
Matt said and looked at Richard.
"I added that neural net feedback process you asked for. This sounds like just the kind of effect it might have."
Richard said nothing but nodded slowly.
"So your probability phase space has islands of stability?"
Bill asked.
"Cool. It does leave one small question unanswered, though. What the fuck did we just connect to?"
"Venus, maybe," Matt said.
"I don't think Venus fits the bill," Kevin replied. "First, the pressure at the surface of Venus is like 90 atmospheres, and second, it's hot enough to melt lead. Pretty sure we'd be dead and the building would be demolished." "Thanks, I feel much better now," Bill muttered. "But," Kevin continued, "I went back and looked at the first camera in single frame, right when the event started. Have a look."
They all moved to get a close view. Frozen on the monitor, distorted by the beginnings of the gas plume, were a small number of dark, distorted objects.
"That's not the flipper," Matt said. "Any idea what those are?"
"No," Bill replied.
"But I bet they're not from around here."
Richard cleared his throat to get attention.
"Yeah, okay, look, we're going to revamp this setup inside Bill's pressure vessel. A couple more days and we're trying again. You might want to bring some body armor next time."
Bill grinned.
"And spare underwear."
10. O de SO2. June 16th. Erin threw her hoodie to the floor and flopped down on Matt's couch.
"That was interesting. I suppose I should be more upset that the trip was cut short, but to be honest, I'm happy to get out of there with all my body parts."
"Well, I'm glad you're back, parts and all," Matt replied. "We'll do inventory later."
Matt seemed relieved to have her back. Her email from Yellowstone had been very detailed and might have given him the impression that she had been in more danger than she admitted. While she wouldn't say it to him, Erin thought he might even be right. The more she reviewed the events of the trip, the less sanguine she felt. Matt sat and put his arms around her, and Erin snuggled in. A moment later, she sat up straight, wrinkling her nose.
"You know, I guess the odor got into my skin or something. It's like I can still smell the sulfur dioxide."
Erin sniffed her arm, frowned, and looked around.
"No, that's not me. And it's not my imagination either."
She got up, wandered around for a few seconds, then picked up one of Matt's t-shirts that had been draped over a chair.
"Matt, why does your shirt smell like a fumarole?"
"Who's got the what now?"
"Your t-shirt reeks of sulfur dioxide. Have you been seeing another volcanologist behind my back?"
She poked him playfully with her index finger.
That's from an experiment that we did yesterday."
"You mean your project? A physics experiment about randomness is making you smell like a volcano?"
Matt's face acquired a deer-in-the-headlights expression.
"Okay, that's interesting," Erin thought,
Obviously, there was more to this than standard science nerdery.
He repeated. Richard's kind of a nut about confidentiality, and he doesn't have much of a sense of humor about it. Or about anything else, really.
Yeah, no, there'll be no deflecting. Come on, cough it up.
With a sigh, Matt told her about the events at the lab.
So your project ejected a plume of gas? And that's what I smell?
This is all supposed to be confidential. Spilling the beans to my girlfriend is going to get my bro license revoked. Not to mention that Bill will point out some movie where this happens and someone ends up getting killed.
Uh-huh. I'm coming to your next meeting. I need to talk to them about this,
Aaron stated with finality.
I'm not sure you guys have thought this through. In fact, I'm sure of it.
A few hours later, Aaron entered Dempsey's pub as Matt held the door for her. She waited while he did a quick once-over to find his group. The pub was less than half full, and the buzz of background conversation was muted. It was around dinner time, so the aroma of caramelized onions, cooked beef, and vinegar dominated the room. Matt's stomach rumbled, and Aaron smiled.
Wouldn't mind a burger myself.
He touched her elbow lightly, and she followed him in the indicated direction. Three men were sitting at the table. She recognized Bill, and had no trouble guessing which of the other two was Richard and which was Kevin. As they approached the table, Aaron carefully watched the expressions on the men's faces. Kevin's affect was more or less blank. He barely seemed to notice her. Math genius, Matt had said, so he probably only rarely touched down in the same reality as the rest of the world. Richard, a large, muscular man more reminiscent of a fullback than a physicist, had started off looking perplexed, but was now switching to angry. Aaron would have to get Matt to explain the whole project advisor thing in more detail, but it looked like his prediction had been right. Richard was very protective of this project and wasn't taking her presence well. And Bill was grinning, of course, probably anticipating some entertaining fireworks. Typical Bill, always looking to stir things up. Matt held a chair for Aaron as she sat down, and Richard transferred his glare to her. She glared back at him, daring him to give her any lip. Best establish the nature of their relationship early. Matt did quick introductions. Richard waited for the courtesies to be completed, then said,
"I assume there's a good reason for bringing your girlfriend?"
Aaron held up a finger before Matt could reply.
"I'm not here as Matt's girlfriend. I represent myself, and I'm here to provide some context on your experiment that you seem to have completely missed."
Matt cut in before Richard could react.
"Look, Richard, Aaron smelled the fumes from the event yesterday on my clothing, and I think she may have a better viewpoint on this than we do."
He spread his hands.
"She's a geology major. She identified the chemical in the gas plume just from the odor, and it scares me a little bit that she thought I'd been hanging around a volcano. I know you wanted this project kept quiet, but I'm pretty sure we're out of our depth. We've got an actual gate on our hands, the kind where things can come through. What if the next time we open the gate, the results are even worse? What if we open it into the interior of a volcano? Or a star?"
All eyes were on Richard as he glared at Matt.
"How much have you told her?"
"I've filled in the basics, enough to understand the problem, and enough to understand why it should be kept quiet."
Richard turned to Aaron, still glowering.
"You understand that part? You can cause a lot of damage."
"I get it, Richard. Can we move on?"
Richard tried to stare Aaron down for a few more seconds, then sighed and nodded.
"Okay, maybe we could use a fresh perspective on this."
He took out his phone, poked at it, then handed it to Aaron.
"Here's the video from the event."
She pressed play and watched the scene unfold. Richard, Bill, and Kevin provided running commentary. When the video had finished, Aaron sat in thought for a few seconds, then handed the phone back to Richard.
"I'm guessing that wasn't what you expected. Matt told me that you've been working with dice."
Richard looked down at his hands, and Aaron could see that he was trying not to break into a grin.
Interesting, not as humorless as Matt thinks. A self-control thing?
He looked up, deadpan. Yeah, we figure it was your boyfriend's software mods that did it. He added an AI-based feedback process with learning capability. Apparently, it found something more interesting than our die flipper to zero in on. Erin glanced at Matt, who smiled and gave her a who-me shrug. She swept her gaze around the group.
Look, the heat and that particular gas point to a small number of possibilities. Either you've connected with a volcano or something like it, or you've connected with Venus or something like it.
Erin gestured at Kevin.
Kevin was correct when he said that it probably isn't Venus, at least not at ground level, or you'd all be a whole lot of dead. 1,000-degree temps would have done more than just blister the wall. But you've connected to something that obviously isn't from around here, at least from our version of here. And once you accept that, the sky is the limit.
Richard leaned forward on his elbows. So, what would you suggest?
Matt told me that you're going to try again soon, this time with the gate enclosed in something airtight. That seems like a good plan. Will you have some kind of dead man switch rigged to the container to cut power if it doesn't hold?
I will now, Richard replied, looking surprised. Erin saw Bill grin just outside Richard's field of view and had to struggle to avoid doing the same. She made a pretense of rubbing her lips to hide it while nodding slowly.
Okay, I'd like to be there for it. Can you have cameras focused on the portal or whatever it is?
Yes, Richard gave a dismissive snort. If we can figure out how to have them survive the experience. Erin tapped her fingers on the table in thought.
Can you fill me in on what this is about? I know that it has something to do with Schroeder's cat and random events, but that's about it.
Kevin held up his hands in negation.
First, it's Schrödinger's cat, not Schroeder. Schrödinger was a scientist. Schroeder plays piano.
Erin noted in passing that he talked to the air even when directly responding to someone, like a default lecture mode. She raised one eyebrow and waited for him to continue.
Right. Anyway, according to my models, the old idea that you get a new universe for each chance event is incorrect. When you flip a coin or something, the models say that only those things affected by the coin flip get duplicated and the duplicate realities share the single universe at large.
Like in Sliders? Bill asked.
Yeah, great. First, that's where we get our science these days, from TV. Second, that show assumed you get a new world for every little decision. In reality, it takes a significant event to create a different world line that will persist. Dice flips average out and merge, but if you hit a tipping point, you should get a complete split.
Kevin looked like he was ready to ramp into full-on lecture mode, so Erin held up a hand to forestall him. She looked around the table, a little amused at this group of men who had possibly just made history and were treating it like a technical problem. 11. Adventure Under Glass. June 19th. Bill looked up as Matt and Erin walked in. He grinned, watching Erin skid to a stop as she got her first look at a true mad science lab. In one corner, the portal equipment, in the form of a couple of server boxes and a bunch of cables, sat on the folding table beside the large monitor. In the center of the room, the gate sat inside something that looked like a giant goldfish bowl with metal reinforcements. The cables ran through a gasket on the top of the container. One of the cameras had been positioned to point through the glass directly into the gate. The whole assembly, including the camera, sat on a large, powered turntable. Matt pointed at the setup.
Now that is some mighty fine Rube Goldberg.
Richard waved a hand at the equipment.
That's the pressure vessel that Bill supplied. I have no idea what it was supposed to be for originally, and Bill just grins when I ask. Maybe you can get it out of him. Anyway, the idea is that we'll rotate the whole assembly on the turntable and try to get a 360-degree view of things.
You think that'll work?
It should.
You can't think of this like a TV. It's more like a periscope. Gas came through last time, so it's a physical connection, not merely an image. I think we can rotate our viewpoint by rotating the gate.
And we'll be sitting in the observation room again, Bill added, pointing to an area behind thick glass. Just in case.
Richard nodded absentmindedly as he went through his startup sequence on the tablet. I got the parameters from the logs the other day, so I know where the attractor is. I can just set the equipment to the general area in phase space, then let it lock on by itself.
Shouldn't someone make a speech or something? Bill said. Boldly go, yada yada.
Christ's sake, Richard muttered as he flipped a final switch. Okay, it'll start up in 30 seconds. This would be a good time to get undercover. Matching action to words, he hastened to the observation area, quickly followed by the rest of the group. The monitor was ready to show the images from the cameras. Kevin played with the remote and pulled up the feed that showed the quiescent gate.
Just in case this goes badly, Bill said. It's been nice knowing you all.
Jesus Christ, Rustad, just once can you put a cork in it?
Well, we've been talking theory up until now. What if we've gotten it completely, utterly wrong?
Bill made an exploding gesture with his hands. Before Richard could respond, the timer expired and the portal equipment activated. There was a brief flash that made everyone, including Bill, jump. Then the area within the gate settled into a murky view of what appeared to be a landscape with tall objects in the distance. The vessel made a slight groaning sound as the pressure equalized. A glance over at the setup made it clear that air in the vessel was mixing with atmospheric gases from the other side. Readouts on the container indicated a little over 2 atmospheres and 90 degrees Celsius. Once the mixture stabilized, the view through the gate cleared up a bit. Kevin pointed the remote at the video camera and operated the zoom. The view on the monitor expanded, and they found themselves looking at the UNL campus, or a very ruined version of it. In the stagnant mist, they could see corroded and partly collapsed buildings.
That's the engineering center, Kevin said in a soft voice. And Othmer Hall, or what's left of it, Aaron added.
They were silent for several seconds before Kevin said,
Those buildings are in that direction too, on this side.
They stared at the scene of devastation. There was no movement other than an occasional slight shift in the mist.
I'm really, really weirded out right now, Bill said into the silence.
No one replied. He looked around and noted that everyone's facial expressions mirrored how he felt. Okay, I'm going to rotate. Richard operated a control and the turntable started to turn. As it did, the view on the monitor slid sideways. When the assembly had rotated about 90 degrees, they got an out-of-focus image of something too close to the camera. Kevin backed off the zoom and they realized they were looking at part of a wall. Another 90 degrees and they found themselves looking at the room they were all standing in, or a heavily damaged version of it.
Well, not Venus, Bill said with an awed tone.
Nope, Aaron replied.
Earth. Runaway greenhouse effect, from the looks of it. Not as bad as Venus, but bad enough. This is an alternate Earth. And they lost the coin toss.
The group walked to Dempsey's after shutting down the experiment. By tacit agreement, they didn't talk about it until they sat down, looked at menus, and ordered food and drinks. Once the waitress left, Aaron turned to Kevin and asked,
So is there one alternate Earth or an infinite number? It's, probably more than one and might be infinite. See, the way it works, at least according to my math, is that time is multidimensional. There's the normal forward and back, and that's what we experience as past and future, but there's room for multiple tracks. That means that various world lines can run in parallel.
Kevin paused and scratched his head.
The strange attractor thing we've experienced kind of confirms some of the math. Timelines can split, run parallel for a while, then merge when the differences average out, except if something happens that's big enough so they can never merge, where there's no sequence of events where they can ever become similar enough, so then you get a new attractor. This all sounds stupid in English because it's all bad analogies. The math makes a lot more sense.
I guess having the Earth apparently go into a meltdown and kill everyone and everything qualifies as big enough, Matt mused. So is there another Earth beyond that? Maybe it'll be better. Or does it get worse?
Yes, maybe no, Kevin replied. If there are more beyond Greenhouse Earth, they could be better or worse. It's a random walk, not a trend. Although there might be a general tendency for each Earth to be a little stranger compared to us. Not counting things like being a burnt cinder, I mean. Can we connect to other world lines? Aaron asked. We can, but only by finding and locking onto an attractor.
Kevin glanced at Richard.
Since the portal equipment always starts up with the same parameters, Richard added, we'll always get Greenhouse Earth. What you're talking about now is trying to aim the equipment in a completely random direction.
Can we do that?
Possible in principle, but we didn't build steering into the equipment. Richard looked at Kevin, then at Matt. We could shift the X and Y matching phases at startup. Matt, can you add that to the UI?
No problem.
Bill looked around the table.
This is huge. You guys understand that, right? We've just proven the many worlds theory, more or less. This will change the world forever.
Which is why, Richard replied, Kevin and I are so concerned about Keating. In a perfect world, we'd get credit for this, become rich and famous, get Nobel Prizes, and so on.
But in the real world, you could have it taken away from you and you end up with nothing. I get it.
Bill looked at his hands for a moment.
Doesn't even have to be the university. What if the government gets wind of it? They could classify it. We could all disappear, end up in Area 51 for the rest of our lives, or in shallow graves.
Richard frowned. You know there's no need to mock us.
What makes you think I'm not serious? You've been worried about Keating as if an over-the-hill bureaucrat is the worst thing that can happen. The way I see it, Keating is bad mostly because he'd spout off about it to anyone who'd listen. If the government gets wind of your discovery, do you think they'll just sit back and wait to see what happens? Do you seriously think there are no military implications to this?
Richard glared at Bill in silence for a few seconds. Yeah. Okay, so it's even worse than I've been thinking. Thanks, I feel much better.
Bill shrugged. We might as well be clear about what we're getting into here.
A pall settled over the group as each person considered the implications.
So, should we?
Aaron said.
Hand it over to the military, I mean. Would it be that bad an idea?
No way, Richard replied. They'd take it away from us without compensation or explanation. We're just students. Kevin is an Indian national, and my family situation would make me a poor security risk in any case. There's no possibility we'd be cleared to keep working on it. They'd just take it away.
He glared at Bill.
Nice job. Now you've got me doing it.
Still,
Matt replied, Aaron has a valid point. Is it the responsible thing to do? Richard opened his mouth to reply, but Bill held up a hand.
Let me field this one.
You're assuming that the government and the military will handle the discovery in a responsible and ethical manner. I find that unlikely in the extreme. There are so many possibilities with this discovery, scientific, humanitarian, whatever else. And if the government gets it, that's all gone.
And not to put too fine a point on it, but Kevin and I would like to get something out of this discovery,
Richard added.
Okay, Aaron replied. I don't really disagree, but the question had to be dealt with.
The other thing to consider is that the two options aren't mutually exclusive, Bill said. We can work with it for a while, and if it gets too big for us, then hand it over. But once we do hand it over, there's no going back.
Or we just go public right away, Matt said. Release it into the public domain.
And again, lose control completely, Richard growled.
Well, what are you hoping to do with it?
I don't know yet what we can do with it, Aaron. I'd like to find out. That's why I went into science in the first place.
Aaron gave Richard a small smile of acknowledgement and sat back. Richard looked around the table.
Bill's right that releasing the information is a one-way street, so for now, at least, let's keep this to ourselves. We can all revisit the question if things go sideways.
12. The Other Way. June 22nd.
I wrote a speech, Bill said, deadpan.
Matt snickered. Richard closed his eyes in a display of exaggerated exhaustion, but otherwise ignored Bill.
Seriously, we're making history here. Maybe. Or maybe we're about to create a big hole in the campus.
Or in the universe, Matt added.
Even better. Don't you think a speech is in order?
Matt shook his head.
I bet it starts out, space the final frontier.
Or, here, hold my beer.
Bill grinned as Matt laughed. Richard looked about ready to start the experiment anyway. The equipment had been cleaned up a little more, and the portal hardware was now contained in a single PC server box. The actual gate was again sealed in the pressure vessel that Bill had provided, the whole assemblage sitting on a turntable in the middle of the lab. Kevin had set up the cameras again with one pointed straight through the viewport.
Okay, we're ready to go. Richard looked around the group, tablet in hand. It's still not what I call real directional control. What we've done is added some feedback to avoid greenhouse Earth's attractor while searching for a new one. To use a fishing analogy, we're throwing our line out and trying to hook something new while avoiding the old location.
Kevin grimaced.
That analogy hurts my head.
Richard smiled at him, then continued.
The pressure vessel is a good precaution, but doesn't entirely eliminate any danger. Last chance to back out. Last chance to argue. Anyone?
He waited for comments.
Well, okay then.
He poked the tablet and the experimental equipment powered up. The whole crew leaned forward, staring at the monitor. The gate opened with none of the drama of the previous attempts. Instead, it showed a scene straight out of a nature documentary. The monitor pictured a large meadow with sparse forest, blue sky, and the occasional fluffy cloud. A herd of what appeared to be especially stocky deer grazed in the meadow.
Now that's more like it, Matt exclaimed. This is like the exact opposite of worst case.
Bill gestured at the image.
I am perversely disappointed at the lack of horrific disaster displayed here.
You would be, Matt said.
If you're done with the comedy, I'm going to rotate the assembly now, Richard said.
The view shifted as the turntable slowly rotated. Aaron said in a soft voice,
Looks almost like the Lincoln area, doesn't it? Maybe a little hillier. Why would that be?
No one had an answer, and the turntable finished a complete rotation in silence.
Richard muttered, Well, I'll be damned. I guess we lucked out this time.
What now?
Aaron said. Bill made a helpless gesture with his hands.
Notwithstanding how utterly cool this is, we don't really have a lot of options. We can rotate the gate, we can dial in Wild Kingdom Earth or Greenhouse Earth, and that's about it. So far, anyway. We can move the gate around, of course, but I shudder at the image of us trying to drag this assembly around the campus with a giant extension cord trailing behind. He grinned at the others. And fending off campus security the whole time.
Richard shut off the gate.
You ain't wrong. And he glanced at Kevin. Maybe it's time for Kevin and me to come clean on this whole project. This is going to require a lot of beer.
Come clean?
Bill exclaimed.
I thought you already came clean. There's more cleaning? It's even worse?
Richard replied with a sour look.
I may have left out a few details. Let's get to the beer first, okay?
Matt leaned toward Bill and muttered,
"Rogue physicists."
They gathered their possessions and headed out. Kevin pulled out a set of keys and made a point of locking the lab door and testing it with a pull. Richard held up his tablet and waggled it.
"It's not going to be much good without this, but I agree with the sentiment, buddy."
Erin sat back in her chair and stared at Richard, jaw agape.
"Well, it's not technically theft, but it's close enough to maybe get you suspended."
Bill's eyes darted from person to person, trying to take it all in. Richard had the grace to look embarrassed, and Kevin looked like he could burst into tears any second. The group sat in the same corner of Dempsey's as on the previous visit. With its bad angle to the wall-mounted TV, this end of the pub was always more sparsely inhabited.
"I know, Erin. We started out doing everything by the book, but Kevin mentioned that we could test one of his many world's predictions with a small mod to the equipment. Then that worked, and we could do this other thing by just adding a few parts."
Richard grimaced.
"It took about 2 weeks before we realized we'd borrowed a couple $1,000s worth of equipment that wasn't on the proposal."
Bill gave Richard the stink eye.
"If someone had noticed..."
"Someone did. We got a query. That's when we totaled up the equipment requisitions."
"And?"
Again, Richard looked at Kevin before answering.
"We submitted a revised proposal."
"Keating approved that?"
"No," Richard shook his head. "He doesn't know."
"But the revision would require his signature."
Richard said nothing. A slow flush crept up his face. There was a charged silence as everyone stared at him. Erin shook her head slowly.
"I withdraw the maybe. You're screwed. This may be one of those cases where forgiveness is better than permission," Bill added.
"That's kind of our only option at this point, I think," Richard said. "We need the biggest, most dramatic announcement possible, made as publicly as possible. Associate it and ourselves with the university. Then they won't dare suspend us."
"So you're betting the wad,"
Bill grinned at Richard.
"I like your style, but it explains why you've been looking like you swallowed a live squirrel."
Richard surprisingly returned the smile.
"Honestly, Bill, most of the time I feel like I'm about to throw up. My financial plan for getting through college has no slack in it, even one bad semester, and I can't complete my degree."
"How far do you want to go before making an announcement?"
Bill said.
"I may have an idea for a backup plan."
"I bet it's larcenous," Matt said.
"It's not. And as far as I know, we won't be breaking any laws at all.
Other than the ones that Richard and Kevin may already have broken." Richard scrubbed his face with his hands.
"At this point, I'll listen to anything."
Bill turned to Erin.
"This is your specialty, Erin. What's the closest large gold strike to us?"
"Historically? Probably the Deadwood strike in the Black Hills. It would be about $250 million worth in today's money. Why?"
"Because if these other Earths are essentially near duplicates of our Earth, then the chances are that things like mineral deposits will be in the same place, including gold."
"Most of that strike was mined out, Bill.
On this side, Erin. If I'm right, it's still all there on Wild Kingdom Earth."
"The operative word is mined."
Bill's face fell.
"Oh, yeah, okay. I don't want to actually engage in exercise."
"Wait, why do you think it's still all there?"
Richard said.
"It's an assumption, Richard, but I don't think it's unreasonable."
Bill waved a hand.
"Think about how different the past would have to be in order for major geological artifacts like metal deposits to be in a certain location on this side, but not on that side. You'd need a completely different geological history. Based on what Kevin says, it sounds like these alternate realities are almost the same, just different in details."
Kevin nodded.
"That's right. I think the principle of parsimony applies here. Don't assume something is different unless we see evidence requiring that belief."
Bill smiled at Kevin, then tilted his chin at Aaron. So these gold deposits in Deadwood, were any of them panned successfully?
Could be.
Aaron got a thoughtful look.
In fact, I think they still have panning gigs for the tourists up there. I'll check and get back to you, but if it isn't the Black Hills, it'll be somewhere else. Placer gold is about the most accessible kind there is.
Now it was Kevin's turn to look around the table, shock plain on his face.
Wait, you want to use this discovery to go panning for gold?
Think of it as a proof of concept, Kevin, Bill replied, as well as a backup plan if the university does come down hard on you. A few mil in the bank, you can buy your own equipment and take your research anywhere you want.
Thanks, I like it here.
Not the point, Kev, Richard nodded thoughtfully. Bill's plan is for the worst-case scenario. Best case, we use it as a demonstration. Worst case, we fund our own project. He looked around the table. You guys aren't associated with this yet. Not on paper. You can walk away.
Or not. As you say, we're not officially associated with it, so if it hits the fan, we're not likely to get caught in the fallout.
Bill cocked his head.
Meanwhile, if things go according to plan, we could all end up millionaires. It's not terrible, as fates go.
Aaron stared at Bill.
I'm sure I already know the answer, but why did this idea spring fully formed into your head?
Bill and Matt both laughed.
Hell, even I know that one, Matt said. It's one of the first things time travelers always want to do, visit a gold mine before it's discovered. The only surprise would be if Captain Reference here didn't suggest it.
One problem, though, Aaron said. We don't actually know if Wild Kingdom Earth is uninhabited.
Bill pulled his head back in surprise.
Damn, I did not see that one coming. But how could we tell? What if this actually is a time machine instead of a parallel universe portal?
It's not, Kevin said. Okay, but still, Aaron brings up a good point. Bill leaned forward and put his weight on his elbows.
Caution is warranted. If we find humans, we pull back and adjust plans. For now, though, my gut feeling is that Wild Kingdom is either uninhabited or so sparsely inhabited as to make no practical difference.
Bill paused and looked around the table.
Given that assumption, are we provisionally prepared to investigate my idea just in principle?
There was silence. Then,
I'm in,
from Matt.
Me too, said Aaron. I'd really like to not be scrambling to fund every semester. I also would like to find out why Lincoln is hillier on that side. As long as we're not doing anything illegal,
Kevin added.
Technically, that isn't Nebraska we're talking about, just a place that looks a lot like Nebraska used to, Richard said.
That sounds like a lot of lawyering, Matt commented.
Richard smirked.
I'm sure there will be lots of lawyers involved once this gets out.
Can we hope to keep control of the invention when that happens? Aaron said.
Richard shook his head.
Kevin is a genius, but if he can figure out the theory, someone else will too, sooner or later. Things like that happen in science. Without any kind of collaboration, several people in different parts of the world suddenly come up with the same ideas at around the same time. Breakthroughs don't come in a vacuum. Even Einstein started with other people's work to get to his theory. Shoulders of giants and all that.
And the hardware isn't that complicated once you know what you're trying to do, Bill added. At least the gate part of it.
Patents don't help either, Richard said. They just prevent people from selling it, not from making it in their basements. Now, we are golden as long as no one realizes what we're doing. Once that breaks, it's only a matter of time.
Again, what about burying it and walking away?
Aaron suggested.
Kevin looked chagrined.
You're asking me to throw away everything I've been working on for the last 5 years without explanation. And as Richard said, someone else will figure it out eventually. All right, I accept that,
Aaron thought for a few seconds.
Of course, patents will make you a lot of money, and there's the Nobel Prize.
Richard waggled his hand to say so-so.
The Nobel isn't guaranteed, although I think we'd have a pretty good shot. But That'd be mostly Kevin and could easily be a decade away. And again, that's assuming the university doesn't toss us out and keep the lab notes.
And the Nobel really isn't that much money in the end, Bill added.
But what about patents? Aaron said.
Yeah, maybe, Richard replied. But I don't think this would be a mass-market product along the lines of the PC or DVD player, where we'd sell hundreds of millions of units. And anyway, if someone figures out a slightly different way to do it, a patent could be worthless.
And that's assuming the military doesn't just shoot us and bury it, Bill added.
There was a short silence as everyone pondered the alternatives. Bill took the opportunity to signal the waitress for refills. The table settled into one of those silences where each person was busily holding their own counsel. After a few seconds, Richard said, I'd like to move this out of the university as well. Lousy security and too many curious people.
Now you are talking theft, Aaron replied.
There's precedent. As long as we have paperwork for everything we take off-site, we'll be good.
That would make me feel better if the paperwork wasn't forged, Aaron said ruefully.
Richard replied with a sickly smile and a shrug.
And we need to build a second portal, Bill said.
What? Why? Bill glared at Richard.
Are you kidding me? What are you, slow? Do you think nothing will go wrong? You're like the guy who shrugs off concerns, then gets eaten or blown up in the next scene. You're like the guy who goes into the attic alone because that's the smart thing to do.
Bill shook his head and held out his hands, palms out.
Dude, I've seen every sci-fi and horror movie known to man. I've seen people locked in, locked out, locked up, abandoned, lost, crushed, eaten, beaten, shot, disintegrated, or just stuck out on the street in their underwear because they didn't bother to take precautions. God exists, and he's not only a nasty SOB, he's also a B-movie director with a warped sense of humor. And I don't want to be his next sight gag.
He leaned back and crossed his arms.
So I am not going anywhere near that thing unless you have spare parts, a spare unit, spare batteries, and a spare generator. You want to skip all that? Fine. I'll wait on this side.
Richard made a wry face. Well, you ain't wrong.
And what about the original project, the one Keating thinks you're working on? Aaron said.
Kevin and I will put together a report that fits entirely within the original parameters. It will even have predictable results. We'll file that with Keating. He'll be happy he doesn't have to do any extra examination, and he'll probably just rubber stamp it. From that point, we have maybe up to a month to return the equipment.
So we're on a deadline,
Bill mused.
We have to get enough gold by that time to be able to pay for our own equipment if it comes to that. There's something else, Aaron said.
All eyes turned to her.
If we're going to be actually traveling to the other side, we need to know what we might be up against. I have a friend who is a zoology major. She's also very familiar with guns, which could be handy.
Bill's eyebrows rose.
Wow. Should we be afraid? Absolutely. Monica's been my friend most of my life, and I love her, but she has 6 older brothers, and they trained her well. You don't want to piss her off.
Got it.
Bill looked over at Richard.
Dude, either you are sucking on a lemon or you have a problem.
Yeah, just not happy about bringing another person in on this.
Aaron sighed. Richard, do you know what kind of predators there are on that side? Lions and tigers and bears? Velociraptors? How about diseases? I'd like to know what might be wanting to eat me before we step through that thing. Plus, Monica might be able to offer an informed opinion on the question of human populations.
Richard nodded, and Bill looked around at the others.
Anyone else want to add anyone?
No?
Then I think this is it. 6 instead of 5 is no big deal, and it sounds like we need Monica. I, in particular, do not wish to be lunch.
Richard sat back, a look of resignation on his face. Fine. But I'm holding you to that, Bill. Membership is capped at 6. Any additions come out of your share.
13. Night moves. June 23rd.
Bill met Richard, Matt, and Kevin at the loading bay, a nondescript white panel van sat waiting.
"Dude, why didn't you just bring your pickup?"
Bill said to Matt.
"Or I could hang a sign around our necks saying we're stealing stuff. This looks less suspicious."
Bill grinned at his friend.
"That's good. Proper paranoid thinking. I may finally be rubbing off on you."
"I didn't need that image."
Matt turned to Richard.
"Might as well get this moving."
Richard nodded and pulled out his keys. It took less than 20 minutes to move the equipment from the lab to the van. Bill felt an itch between his shoulder blades during the whole operation, as if he was about to be shot as a looter. But they ran into only one other person the whole time, and he barely looked up from his phone long enough to avoid a collision. As they were closing the van doors, Bill looked around.
"Great security. Did anyone even see a guard?"
"They always go for coffee about now," Richard replied. "These aren't elite security services, and the physics lab isn't really a high-value target. Why do you think I picked this time specifically?"
"Fair enough," Bill said. "And any thief with half a brain will be stealing bicycles, not lasers anyway."
A 15-minute drive took the group to a warehouse storage unit with an outside access door where they reversed the whole process. In short order, the equipment was up and going through diagnostics.
"All good," Richard finally announced.
"Sure hope so,"
Matt replied.
"I'm going to want to be paid back for all this."
"I appreciate you bankrolling this operation," Richard said. "Although if this whole plan tanks..."
Matt glared at Bill before answering.
"I'll just sell Bill's comic book collection."
"Over my dead body?"
Richard smiled thinly.
"I agree to those terms."
The next day, Bill arrived at the warehouse to find the rest of the group, including Aaron, already there.
"What the heck is that?"
Matt said, pointing at the large box in Bill's arms.
"Watch and learn."
Bill went to the kitchen area and proudly unpacked the contents, a commercial-grade coffee maker, the kind that a restaurant or cafeteria would use.
"Craigslist, $10, and for the record, I live not only for coffee, but on coffee."
"Leaving aside," Matt said, "the problem of stocking enough supplies for the thing..."
"Time to focus, people," Richard said. "Status, Bill, you've been working on a couple of new gates. How is that going?"
Bill lost his smile as he got down to business.
"I'll have the medium-sized gate finished tonight. The larger ones will take a little longer. Supply issues. Plus, I have to book time in the fabrication shop. If we can pull in some money from this venture, I'd like to set up a small metal shop here, eventually."
"One thing at a time. I've sourced the components we need for more gates and portals, but the distributor is in Omaha. He's shipped what he had by priority courier, but he'll have to order the rest. So for now, I'm going to borrow," Richard made air quotes, "some items from the lab, then replace them later."
Aaron shook her head.
"We're criminals. Unbelievable. Mom will die if she ever finds out."
Richard chuckled and continued.
"We'll need supplies as well. A generator, gold panning equipment, possibly camping equipment. Aaron, have you verified the Deadwood strike?"
"Yes. There was a lot of gold extracted by panning before they found the mother lode and started mining. We can probably get tens of millions worth if we keep at it."
Richard looked at Aaron with a disbelieving expression.
"Is there that much gold at Deadwood?"
Aaron nodded.
"Easily."
Bill waved his hand in the air.
I volunteer to be the purchasing department."
"Don't do it, people," Matt warned. "He'll bankrupt us even after we get rich."
Bill glared at Matt.
"I resent the implication. Libel, defamation, calumny."
"I've seen your room. You, sir, are a pack rat, and it's slander. Libel is..."
"Don't you dare quote J. Jonah at me."
14. In the news.
This is NBC Nightly News for June 23rd. Good evening. The U.S. Geological Survey today downplayed the increasing volcanic activity in Yellowstone National Park. A spokesman said, "Nothing that we are seeing now is unprecedented. The coincident increase in events can be explained as nothing more than a statistical fluke, a chance convergence of cyclical peaks."
Critics point out that the alignment of seismic activity, ground movement, outgassing, landslides, and outflows is, in fact, unprecedented, since it hasn't happened in recorded history, so no predictions can be made. Christine Hanna, the FEMA spokesperson, assured reporters that the agency is prepared for any fallout. "We have experience with the results of volcanic activity based on past world events. This is well within the capabilities of our agency to mitigate." The public, however, appears to be less confident. Major retailers and retail warehouses report runs on products even marginally useful for stockpiling, and personal weapons sales have increased significantly. 15. Checking the date. June 24th. Bill looked up as Richard and Kevin entered the warehouse. He gave them a wave, which Kevin returned awkwardly and Richard ignored. Bill found himself slightly annoyed. Richard had asked him to meet them here in late evening. The least he could do was be minimally polite. "Okay, what's up?" Bill asked. Richard carefully put down a long, bulky carrying case and gestured to it. "Kevin wants to check out the whole question of the date in Wild Kingdom Earth, and it's a good first test of your new gate." Kevin opened the case, and Bill tried not to drool. The contents consisted of a very high-end-looking telescope, complete with computer-controlled equatorial mount. Kevin began assembling it, and it was obvious from the lack of wasted motion that he'd done this many times.
"Very nice," Bill said. "I am not ashamed to admit I'm envious."
Kevin looked pleased.
"It's a Meade 10-inch. This telescope is more powerful than anything any pre-20th century astronomer ever had access to."
"Which makes me wonder what we're going to be observing in a warehouse." "Kevin had a great idea," Richard said. "We're going to set up the new 3-foot gate so he can aim the telescope through it at the night sky on the other side."
"And then?"
"You'll have to ask Kevin." Bill opened the box at his feet. He had completed a new gate, this one about 3 feet in diameter, and had brought it with him per Richard's request. Richard took the assembled gate and attached the cables from the portal equipment. "We'll have to hold the gate in the air while Kevin does whatever he's going to do. This will take 2 people, Richard said.
"Just hold it in front of where the telescope is pointing?" Bill replied.
"Yes," Kevin said.
"Now turn the lights off. Use a pen light to see with. This one with a red filter."
"Why a red filter?" Richard said.
"Red light doesn't wreck your night vision."
Richard switched on the portal generator and picked up the tablet. After a few seconds of his poking at dialogues, the gate faded into focus, showing a starry night. Bill looked through the gate aperture and smiled at the view. The night sky of Wild Kingdom Earth from within a dark warehouse in Lincoln. Kevin made sure his telescope pointed properly through the gate, then bent over the eyepiece. He made a couple of small adjustments and asked Richard and Bill to move the gate a little to one side. When Kevin was satisfied, he started concentrating on the view through the telescope, with occasional breaks to make notations in a book. True to his instructions, he wrote his notes by the red light of a filtered flashlight. Kevin worked without comment for several minutes. Despite the fact that the 3-foot gate was really quite light, Bill was beginning to feel the strain from holding one position.
"Almost done, Kevin?"
Kevin held up an admonishing finger and made a few more adjustments. Then,
"Okay, I'm done. Gate off and lights on, please."
Richard complied and came back to find Kevin consulting a magazine and his notes. Looking up from his work, Kevin turned to them and said,
"No question. The other Earth isn't the past, it's present-day Earth. I compared the position of the Galilean satellites to the published positions in this month's Sky and Telescope. Perfect match. Plus Jupiter is in the same place in the sky, as is the Moon. And finally, Barnard's star is right where it's supposed to be."
"Fine," Richard said. "So where are all the people?"
"There were no people on Greenhouse Earth either."
"Yeah, 200-degree temps will do that," Bill said. "So what's the excuse here?"
"Who knows?"
Kevin began packing up his telescope.
So many things could have gone wrong, or right, depending. What we know is that Lincoln doesn't exist on that side. There's no pollution, and the flora and fauna look like what you'd imagine it must have been like before humans.
Which is the point I was making earlier, Bill said. If it's the same date on that side and we're still looking at uninhabited wilderness, then there's a good chance there isn't going to be a human population to worry about.
Kevin shrugged.
I guess. I'm still not sold on the whole gold panning thing.
Yeah, I get it, Kev. So why was this so important to you? Richard said.
Kevin stopped packing.
I trust my mathematical models, really, but Bill made that comment about it maybe being a time machine. That might mean that this wild planet was the past and Greenhouse Earth was the future. I couldn't get it out of my head, but I've proven that Wild Kingdom Earth isn't the past, so it's not a time travel thing.
Richard considered for a few seconds. I'm not sure what bothers me more, that one out of three worlds so far has apparently never had humans, or that on one out of two that had humans, we killed ourselves off.
If that's what happened, Bill said, eventually we'll want to jump beyond these two to find out more, but that will take a lot of infrastructure.
Kevin frowned. How so? I mean, I'm not really clear on the engineering.
I talked to Matt about this, Bill replied.
Since he wrote the feedback software, he has a good perspective on it. If we try to throw our fishing line, we're always going to get the closest nodes, whatever closest means in your weird phase space. To reach a node that's farther from us than Wild Kingdom Earth, for instance, I think we'd have to start from Wild Kingdom Earth. I don't think we'd be able to reach it from here. That actually makes sense,
Kevin said.
I'll run some models, but I think you're probably right.
Which means setting up beachheads on each Earth in order to move farther along to the next one, Richard added. Honestly, I'm not sure we want to be the ones doing that. It's one thing to get an early shot at the gold rush. It's another thing to...
Create your own SG-1, Bill finished with a laugh.
16. New Recruit. June 25th.
What up, Buttercup?
Aaron smiled at the familiar voice. There was no question about who was at the other end of that yell. Monica. Monica Albertelli had been raised in a large, traditional Italian home, always competing for attention and airtime with her six brothers. She had what some would call stage presence, which included a voice that carried, and when necessary, could shock people into astonished silence. Aaron slid into the booth across from her friend and grabbed at the nachos.
Thank God, if I never see another burger.
I thought you were tired of Mexican food, woman. I'm glad I'm not dating you.
Aaron grinned at Monica, then stuffed a guac-laden nacho into her mouth.
I don't disapprove, Monica said.
She pushed a menu toward Aaron.
Let's get down to business. You sounded very mysterious on the phone. You've been recruited by the government?
Yeah, that's it. We have to save the world.
Aaron settled back and opened the menu.
Remember I mentioned Matt was involved in a mystery science project? Well, it's turned out to be very interesting, and I do mean like the Chinese curse.
Monica cocked her head and her tone became more serious.
Okay. And? I think we have to show you before you'll really believe us. Then explanations. But the bottom line is, we need a zoologist. Zoologist for a physics project. This is going to be good. Or really stupid. Is it a journey to the center of the Earth kind of thing, or more Jurassic Park?
Aaron tried not to sputter with amazement. That had hit way too close to home. Instead, she laughed.
You know, I think you and Bill will get along well together. He has a case of referencitis that could put you to shame. Them's fighting words, woman, and you didn't answer my question. Been keeping up your weapons certifications?
Monica's eyebrows rose at the abrupt change of subject.
Yeah, sure. Is that relevant? And you still didn't answer my question.
Aaron grinned without replying, and Monica shook her head.
This better be one honey of a demonstration. But for the record, I'm hooked. Where and when? Tomorrow around 6, I'll pick you up.
Aaron waved the menu.
But for now, lunch. I have weird friends. Me too.